Hello, strong, feisty women. Some of you may recognize my voice. I'm Celine Yeager, host of the Hit Play Not Pause podcast. Throughout my career as a professional health and fitness writer and now a podcaster, I hear countless questions from women who are trying to understand how their ever-changing hormones impact their sports performance. So we decided to serve up some answers in a brand new series called Hormonal that we will be releasing on the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast feed. Throughout this four-part series, reproductive endocrinologist Dr. Carla DiGirolamo and I will be tackling topics like periods, the pill, pregnancy, and conditions like PCOS, all from the perspective of sports performance. If you aren't already, follow the Feisty Women's Performance Podcast and stay tuned for our first episode releasing on April 15th. Also, have questions you want answered? Send us a voice note at speakpipe.com/hormonal and we'll get it answered on the show.
We're live. Welcome everybody to our last webinar, educational event. What are we calling them, Sarah?
Our last for now, for educational now. Event.
Yeah. Our last until the next one. I'm Kelly, this is Sarah. We're with Feisty Media, and this is Dealing with Post-Race Letdown and What's Next. We are presenting these as we have a number of our other special educational events this year in partnership with the VinFast Ironman World Championships. And to get more info on Ironman or Ironman 70.3 events, races and training, you should follow Women for Try on Instagram. And so if you've listened to our other ones, you know we've talked about preparing for Kona. We talked about kind of the lead up. And now we're talking about after. And so Sarah, I want to ask you, you know, just before we set the stage here and hand it off, why was it important that we talked about after the race too? Why did it not just end at the race?
Yeah, well, I think this was actually your idea, wasn't it?
I know, really? It's because I'm brilliant.
It's brilliant. no, I think I do actually think it's brilliant. I think that like that post-race feeling that we have that like I think everyone or most people have to some extent, which is either like a small low up to like, you know, somebody who might experience a more serious like type of depression after a race. I think that we often like we know that it happens and we talk about it like in silos or in our own little like chat group mm-hmm. or whatever, but we don't necessarily talk about it or have like experts who could help us through it. So I think that's kind of what we wanted to achieve for here sure. is just like have that conversation a little bit more deeply and figure out like what can we do, because we all know it's a thing and we want to help people through it, right?
Yeah, I also think like it's a lot of times we get really obsessed with the race, right? Triathlon kind of exists by races, but we always talk about it being a lifestyle, right? And so it doesn't just mm-hmm. like end obviously we were talking about Kona specifically, it didn't like end, triathlon didn't end on October 15th, like still a thing.
Yeah, yeah. Triathlon did not end on October 15th. What?
So Sarah is going to be hosting this, and I'm going to go away now and hand it off to Sarah, who is the CEO of Feisty Media, former pro triathlete. I feel like I should give your whole spiel, even though you're always here. And she's going to introduce your amazing panelists and get down to it.
Cool. Thank you, Kelly. Okay. I'm very excited to introduce the panelists. But first, for anyone watching live, could you tell us where you are? Where are you watching from? We'd love to hear from you and get the chat going. We also want your questions along the way so that we can get to as many of those at the end as possible. So panelists, here they come. So first, I would like to introduce Dr. Erin Ayala. Erin has a PhD in counseling psychology, and she often works with Feisty. She was a contributor for our Fueled course, our Strong course. She's a cyclist and a triathlete herself. And she works with athletes and leads programs through her company, Skatey Sports Psychology. Hi, Erin.
Hi, Sarah. Thanks for having me. Stoked to be here.
Yeah, so happy that you're here. Okay, and we also have endurance and strength coach Marilyn Chakota. Marilyn is perhaps, and Marilyn, hi. I hope you don't mind me saying this. I feel like you're like the most underrated coach in triathlon, as in like you get so many amazing results for your athletes. And I wish people were talking about you more. And you helped me personally win Ironman Mont Tremblant way back in the good old days. So welcome. We're very happy to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. Really excited to be a part of this conversation.
Cool. And Marilyn coaches through her online business, Marilyn Chakota Coaching. Is that right?
Yeah, mcc.coach is the easiest way to find me.
mcc.coach. Awesome. Okay. And last but definitely not least, we have Jennifer Volman. Jennifer's a longtime, hi Jen, a longtime endurance athlete. And she now works specifically on mindset as well for endurance athletes through her business, findingendurance.com. How are you, Jen?
I'm great. Really excited to be here.
Cool. Welcome. Oh, look, and we have lots of comments. Hello, New York, Carlsbad, Bay Area, Washington, Canada. Yay. Oh, and Mexico. All right. Well, welcome everyone. Thanks for joining us. Okay. So here's where I want to start. Erin, I'm going to start with you. Mm-hmm. You know, we talk about, like, we hear this a lot, like the post-race blues, you know, but what does that really mean?
Yeah, I think this is something that's really unique to endurance athletes training for really significant or big, meaningful events. It's also really common with Olympic athletes who are on a 4-year training cycle. So post-race blues are really, they're think of them as this kind of emotional dip or plateau or letdown that athletes often experience after a really big event. You often, people describe it as feeling hollow, kind of empty, irritable, restless, just kind of lost. And it's usually happening right after, not right after the event, but as like the adrenaline from the event kind of settles before they've gotten back to their typical training routine. So there's also this lack of structure and the routine or schedule that they're used to, which I think further exacerbates it. It's kind of like a loss of purpose in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And loss of purpose can be significant, right?
Very, very, very significant. Yeah.
Yeah. So Marilyn, I'll ask you this first. Like, I know that different people experience a different degree of low point. Just like, could you tell us a little bit about some of the struggles you've seen in some of your athletes?
Yeah. You know, I think the most important thing Erin said, even in that piece, was the part of routine. And I feel like every athlete that I work with, it is a different degree of when they come off of a race. Some of them really need to step back and have a bit of time, and they need that space from all of the stress and the event. And so that is unique to what their needs are within the first, it's usually like 48 hours, 72 hours, you know, 7 days, 10 days. That's sort of the main window. And then other people, you need to really stay on top of them, that it happens pretty quickly. And that routine piece of it is such a huge part of it. And recognizing what type of athlete you are. So, you know, and having a coach that's overseeing that, saying, okay, this is the type of athlete that really does need some space and needs a good 48, 72 hours to just digest everything and have a little bit of space and have a little bit of time to themselves. Or is this an athlete that you need to keep an eye on and say, whoa, if they're really, really sort of, I call it like they're a turtle going into their shell, and that's not, we know that that's not good for them and they need to be into right back into that routine, then that's our job to recognize that and reach out to them and make sure that they're okay and that we start that process quicker than probably what they even want to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jennifer or Erin, have you seen any other types of, I guess, have you seen the struggle appear in any other ways that we haven't talked about yet?
Yeah, the routine is a lot. And then I think a lot of athletes either will then overcompensate and then go back into it too quickly and do too many things without actually taking a proper rest, which you definitely see at the end of the season if they've done that subsequent times. Mm. And then I see a lot of people, I have a lot of athletes, I have trouble with this myself, when you've had all these like big workouts going into like, when you're in a race build, like every workout really matters. And now you're like a 20 minute run. I don't know. That's not a big deal. And so you skip that and then you skip the next one. You skip like you're right off the bike. And then before you know it, a couple months have gone by and they've skipped like 75% of their workouts because they were, you know, kind of lighter than what they expected.
Mm-hmm. And Erin, have you ever seen cases where things have been quite serious, like where folks have fallen into like an actual state of depression?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of it is usually where it is kind of matched with really significant life changes. So it could be job changes or other big stressors, relationship stressors, injury, where things are kind of compounded. I think the other thing that I often see with day-to-day kind of athletes training for these big events is we spend so much time training for them, especially the longer endurance events. We're talking Ironman, you know, gravel centuries or 200 mile races, these ultra races. Athletes will then finish and then they look back on the past 6 months. They're like, I could have, should have, wish I would have. And it's this kind of regret or shame or frustration with how they showed up that specific day, as opposed to a lot of gratitude and appreciation for their body and the work and everything that they poured into it. So I think that's where that kind of emptiness also comes into play, is like, I could have, should have done so much more.
Right. And what is our, like, Erin, what is our brain doing? Like, do, like, why does this happen to us? You know, like, everything is, it's not just, what do you call it? Well, it is just mental, but there's always like a physical side to this stuff, right? Like, there's always chemicals in our brain doing things. And
yeah, it is fascinating. I think it's fascinating because I nerd out over this stuff. Long story short, dopamine is one of the neurotransmitters in the brain. And when we are actively taking steps toward really meaningful goals, we are releasing that dopamine. So if you also think of that feeling, I get goosebumps just thinking about it, crossing the Ironman, the finish, the start of the race is just, it's so exhilarating. That's your dopamine kind of working its way through your system. And with the regular exercise routine, we get used to that. And then, so this is why taper is also really difficult for athletes, because the exercise really significantly drops as we're resting and recovering. So we're not getting that same dopamine that we're used to. So it's basically your mood is shifting as a result of the changes in your routine and the exercise.
Mm-hmm. And so do you think, like, should we be trying to get that dopamine hit somewhere else?
That's what everyone tries to do. Yeah. They're like, what do I do instead? Right. That's where I basically say, like, we've got to ride the waves and the emotions. Like, as athletes, we are setting ourselves up for more highs and lows due to the nature of sport. And so if we're going to ride the highs, we have to accept the lows when they arrive and trust that they will also work their way out of our system. And so then I also say, what have you been neglecting the past 6 or 8 months that you'd like to direct more energy toward? It might be something creative or just like more fun, unstructured workouts, things like that.
Mm-hmm. You know, what's funny. I realize this now, like, now that, you know how like cold plunges are like all the rage right now. When I used to taper, I like realized that sometimes if I just turned like the cold on in the shower, during tapering, when I was feeling that low, I could like actually get a mood enhancement, which is very weird. Like, now to see like the science kind of back that up, but it was just like this hack that I just made up. I didn't know it had any real science behind it. I was just like, I feel better if I do this, so I'm going to do it. So sometimes like little things can make a big difference. You know? Mm-hmm. Okay, Jen, let's ask you this one about like red flags. So, you know, I think some of us, you know, when we don't necessarily have a complete support system, or some folks have just had a coach to get them into the race and through the race, and now are maybe on their own, or are surrounded by friends or people at swim club who they may see suffering. Like, what are some of the red flags to be aware of someone who might be like suffering from a low point of people around us?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's a great point. Also Erin made about just accepting it. Like, that's part of it too, is just accepting this piece of it. So, but if you're finding yourself really struggling, even though you've totally accepted the low point, I find like restlessness is usually a really common sign, and it's back to the signs looking for that hit of dopamine. So if you're like trying to cover it up with all of a sudden like a lot of social activities or too much working out, or perhaps a lot of extra food or a lot of extra alcohol or all these things that will like substitute this, if you find yourself like doing this like to a larger degree than what's normal for you, that might be a sign that you're just at a pretty big low that you're unwilling to feel. And so that's usually a pretty decent sign. And when that happens too, you know, like a suggestion is the first part, just being aware of it. Like, if you're aware that's happening, you're aware that maybe you're facing a low, like that can go a long way to helping you like regulate your system a little bit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Marilyn, anything to add there? Some red flags that you've seen in the athletes you work with?
Yeah, it's a drastic change in behavior to try and get that feeling, right? And that I think that's the key thing that everyone is saying. It's, you know, so I always recommend to people, if you're used to waking up every day at 5 a.m., yeah, have your few days of sleep in, but then let's keep the routine pretty same. Let's wake up at the same time every day. Let's have a schedule planned. You know, most triathletes and athletes are pretty driven people by schedule, and just alone waking up and not, you mentioned about all of a sudden having all this free time. They get a little lost when they don't have all this free time. So I think, you know, we can combat some of these urges to, you know, turn towards food or alcohol or social activities, we recognize that, okay, I'm in a bit of a low here. What can I do to make sure that I stay on track? Well, let's wake up at the same time every day. Let's have a plan where we schedule things at similar times that we're used to doing things every day. If we always swim at 8 a.m. every day, have something planned to go do at 8 a.m. every day that is healthy and it's productive. And it's maybe it's meeting friends. Meeting friends gives you that same type of dopamine, but it's healthy and you're going to have a great conversation with friends. If you're used to getting out for a jog in the afternoon at 3 o'clock after work or 5 o'clock after work, maybe it's that you go for a walk with a dog or you volunteer at a shelter or that's a time that you play with your kids, something that's going to provide that same thing. But it's the same structure and routine. Going, eating your meals at the same time, going to bed at the same time, or fairly close to after you've had a break. And then before you know it, that 2-3 week window has gone by and you're starting to get into, okay, we're reevaluating the season. We're starting to set new goals and we're starting to plan for the next year. You've gotten through that hump and you're on to the next chapter of getting excited about new goals. So I think just like you had mentioned, be aware of it and accept it, but how can we combat it? Combating it comes from sticking close to those same routines and really planning for that in the days ahead, the week ahead, expressing it to your family and friends and saying, hey, I know I'm not training anymore for this specific event, but it's still going to be important for me to follow somewhat of a schedule. I think that's going to be really helpful for most people in that, like I say, 48 hours, 70 hours, but mostly then once we get out of that 72 hours, that 5 days, 10 days, 2 weeks, that's when it's really going to be important to add that structure back in.
Mm. Yeah. And when we talk about adding structure back in, I love your suggestions of like maybe meeting a friend for coffee instead of going to swim club or whatever. But also like how much we, you know, I remember I used to do things like if I would on a day when I would normally swim 4K, I might swim 2K, you know, like, so how much, and Marilyn, I'll bounce this back to you. Like how much exercise should we be doing to make sure that we're like recovering enough to get to stay healthy into the next season too?
Yeah, you know, it's really common if you come off of something, let's say as high as the world championships, and whether you talked about having a poor performance where you come home and you beat yourself down, you feel like you need to get to the grind right away because we're really driven people. Or maybe you come off of a great performance and you're so excited and so motivated for the next year. Jennifer touched on that, that people get carried away and they get at it too quickly. So if you don't have a coach monitoring that for you, I just talked about the schedule. You can place in what recovery activities can I go do? And that was mentioned already. Maybe replace it with something else. Instead, go to your swim practice because it's probably social for you and it's non-weight bearing and there's a recovery element. Maybe you throw on the fins, the buoy, the paddle, and you get out early and you go in a couple lanes that are a little bit easier and swim with some new people. And so the friendship is still there. The structure is still there. There's a recovery element there, but you're not pushing yourself in lane one to get 5K and leaving on a strict send-off and all of those things. And, you know, if you're looking at, okay, well, normally I might run in the afternoon. Well, we know I'm not quite recovered to run. How about going to a spin class or perhaps maybe even just going to a yoga class or trying something different, but you're still doing a little bit of activity and you're cutting it down to, let's say it's going to be under an hour and the intensity is going to be capped at 60 to 70%. And so the primary is that it's recovery based and that it's social and that it's fun and you feel better afterwards. And so you're always looking at those things in that window as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Erin, do you have anything to add to that? Like what else sort of can we do during that time frame to kind of avoid that low or those low feelings?
Yeah, I think I really echo what Marilyn has to say. I think I'd also add like athletes, a lot of endurance athletes really like to achieve and check the boxes and finish things. Like they like the satisfaction of having done something.
Like so what color does it change on Training Peaks?
Exactly.
Like green.
Like, oh, green, right. And so I think in general, it's like, there's like this sense of, because I'm not doing those things right now, there's that restlessness that kind of Jen was describing. And so one of the things I'll often say to my athletes is like, are there other things that you could do to kind of get that satisfaction? One, like volunteering and altruism is a really great way. Like, you know, like walking dogs at shelters or just giving back to the community is a great way to kind of give yourself a boost. But also some of the creativity things, like it sounds cheesy, but is weirdly effective, like mindfulness coloring books. Paint gems is a really big thing now, like these really tiny pieces of beads that you put in. It's like paint by number without the paint, so it's a lot less messy. Or some of the other things of like taking a course online or reading a book that you've had on your nightstand for the past 6 months. Like, what are the things that you feel like you've been wanting to do while training, but you haven't been able to make time for it because you've been prioritizing your training? That's a great opportunity. And then other things, just like thinking about races for the next season. Like, if you want to daydream and plan, like, do it. Like, write down all the races that you'd love to do. And then you can have a reality check with coach later, but like, let yourself daydream. I think that is healthy as well.
I love that. I also want to know about this bead by number thing. Yes.
Yeah. One of my athletes might be watching this right now, but she knows that I've done this. So this is,
this is versatile. Oh, amazing.
So, one of my athletes actually like was really struggling with some of the just like rest day stuff. Like I need to do something. And so, but it was really funny because she's like, oh, you do the small ones. I do the big ones. And I was like, of course you do. Right. But this is like a national parks pack and it's really satisfying.
I love that.
So yeah.
Yeah. And one thing, like, this might seem like out of left field, but I definitely, like, when I was pregnant, another time when like I wasn't getting my usual dopamine hits, you know, and I think like it's a similar kind of thing where you can't do your regular training. Anyway, it was like an opportunity for me to learn what the different elements of my training were doing for me. So like, for example, I found that like I used to like running was part of my life. And when I was 16 years old and I only didn't run for like a couple months during my pregnancy, it's the first couple months I hadn't run for like years, like 20 years. And so I learned though then that like actually walking and being outside was a huge part of what running was doing for me, but I had never separated those things out. And that has now like for, you know, that was like 13 years ago. Like just that learning has been really important because like, oh, I don't need to go running. I can go outside. And that will give me a little bit of that like joy that I'm looking for.
That was something I was just like right at the tip of my tongue that I was going to say, is that making sure that people get sunshine. You know, we're endurance athletes who go outside all of the time. And then all of a sudden, if, you know, it's great to take a course and it's great to tackle some of these other, you know, activities that we want to do, but remembering that some of those, if you're not quite getting it, what you need out of that, and you're sitting there going, oh, that probably isn't for me, it is likely that you're a person that it's important to get outside every day. So that I'm really, really glad that I heard you say that.
That's actually,
Go ahead.
Mm-hmm. It's actually an activity I give some of my, my athletes, is to list out what they love about different pieces of training that they're missing. Like, is it feeling like you did like a really hard effort? Then you can do a short VO2 session on Zwift, or go outside, or go join a group ride and get a VO2 that way, or go outside if you're missing being outside. Cause a lot of times we associate cycling with, like you said, with all those different things, or with running, but we don't realize like maybe we like to swim cause we actually just like to be with our friends. And that's like the most enjoyable part of that. So then you can just replace that without having to do the 5K hard session, or go for the run, or do the long bike ride.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jen, you actually raced in Kona.
I did. Today. Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thanks. That was awesome.
What have you actually been doing these last few weeks? You know,
I can't lie because my coach is on here too. So yeah. She'll be like, not my program today. So I always get post-race blues. Like I just expect them. Like whenever I race up until the following weekend, I will probably be like pretty down. Like it's just a thing. So, and with every race, and then typically, especially in my last race of the season, which the last years have been, well, this year was Kona. And so that's like a really big thing to come off of. Cause it was on top of it being a race. It was like a race. It was such an amazing 10-day experience there. Mm-hmm. So for me, I know it's important. I knew after Kona, I needed a break, like a really big break. For the first time in a long time, I was like, Marilyn, I can't, like, I don't want to do anything. So I didn't do anything for a week, nothing. I just like got caught up in work and had traveled and stuff. And then it's been lifting, actually. I used to do a lot of CrossFit and strength training and haven't in years. And so I've been back at the gym, which has been like, I found myself in the gym, like looking around, like, I don't know where any of the equipment is. I just know where the treadmill is. So that's been fun, and getting back to something I haven't done for a long time. And that's helped a lot because it's just a totally different experience. And so I find that's helpful too. If there's something you've been wanting to try out, like now is a great time to do, if it's yoga or Pilates or kettlebells, or I don't know, whatever it is that seems like a fun thing, trying that out, this is a really great time of year to do. And it's helped me a lot kind of like get through the blues and focus on something else.
Mm-hmm. Well, Marilyn, I know you have Ironman experience. You both have, you know, real life experience. Sorry, did I cut you off? Were you going to say something there?
You know, I'm good.
Okay. No, Marilyn, I know like you have experience too. What did you do after a race?
Yeah. One thing I was going to say is that one thing I guide my athletes through is right after a race to not make any major life decisions.
Yeah.
That's a really important part of it because your urge when you feel restless in that time is going to be to want to suddenly make all these major changes. It might be they just make these drastic big changes. And I always advise my athletes say, just hold on for a second. Like, let's just see how you feel about this in 2 weeks and really, you know, just sort of settle down a little bit for a couple of weeks before you make any major life decisions or any changes. Like people will want to quit the sport or change coaches or, you know, sell their bike or take up something completely drastically different. I always say, just give it a couple of weeks and then let's go from there. But for your question, what I used to do, you know, honestly, because I raced year round full time for a good 10 years, the breaks weren't terribly long. They were, and I raced, I mean, Sarah, you and I raced together. We had our careers together for a long period of time. And, you know, it was, you take a week off, which you were more than happy to do because you trained so hard and then you really raced to the well. And, you know, you took a week off and you just spent that time, you know, just relaxing and recovering and doing some light activities. And then it really wasn't much more than a week and you got right back to training. So, you know, that's, I think I had probably a little bit of different experience because there wasn't these huge, massive gaps between refocus for the next event. I will say that I've done a lot of work recently with retiring professional athletes, mm-hmm. and I went through that when it's actually an end of, mm-hmm. we talked about it, Aaron, you said earlier about like Olympic cycles. And so I've done quite a few interviews with, you know, a professional basketball player, professional triathletes, there's professional cyclists, all different sports, but it sort of is the same kind of concept that we're talking about today is where there's this, you know, when there's a massive transition out. So me personally, post-race wasn't so much of an issue for me just because the opportunity wasn't there. However, it did present itself and I had a very strategic plan post-career because now this was going to be a big, big shift. So probably another conversation, another time, but similar type stuff.
Well, I'm curious now, though, like briefly, like what did that plan look like for you? Like, what were those things that I have my own experience with this as well. But like, how did you transition out?
Yeah, it was really having exactly the things that we're talking about, having a plan set before that transition happened mm-hmm. to continue the same routine and habits. So it's really, and we talk about what that does physically, emotionally, mentally, you know, as far as the chemicals in your body, all of these things, but it's the advice I'm giving is exact same post-race depression, post, you know, 4 year cycle of Olympic Games, major events, post-career, but it really comes down every conversation I've had where there's this huge possibility for it to go into some kind of depression, or maybe there's even things that you don't even know or underlying. That's a huge topic as far as what athletes go through. And it really is sticking close to routine and habits. And that piece alone, if you focus on that, I mean, it's a huge conversation, but that piece is the most important piece. So I went to a completely different sport. So I didn't have the pressure and I didn't have the expectations and I didn't have anything that was sort of those noises in your head, but I continued to stick very close to the same patterns, routines, habits, all of those things. And that really transitioned me through that chapter really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And Aaron, I'm thinking of like some of the people who perhaps are listening or watching who aren't elite athletes, who don't turn around and boom, a week later, like start training, you know, or who have maybe like promised their partner that they're going to do less now that the world championships is over, they're going to be doing less triathlon, right? What do you recommend for those people?
Yeah, I think the one thing that I'll say that this kind of aligns with what Marilyn was saying too about kind of this big transitions in retirement. One of the things that we know for athletes are going to be more likely to experience like psychological distress, anxiety, depression, other difficulties with emotion regulation, the ups and downs for, there's two things that I think of right away. One, their athletic identity. The stronger their athletic identity and the weaker their identity in other areas of their life, being a parent, being a sibling, being a friend, being an entrepreneur, whatever it is so important for people to feed those parts of their identity while they're still competing, regardless of how serious they are or how competitive or how elite or pro they are as an athlete, because that makes these transitions a lot more manageable. And then I think the other thing to think about is just the more, and this is a very sports psych thing that I spend a lot of time talking about with athletes because it's so prominent, the more we tie our self-worth to the outcome of our competition, the harder it's going to be. So for any athlete, regardless of what level you are, if you're going for a certain time or a PR and you don't reach it, and you feel like a failure, that is going to make it much more difficult because there's always this like bar, this gap that you haven't yet reached. And so that comparison game can be really, really tricky. So I'd say, especially for like the athletes where they're kind of looking for this next thing, there's this concept in positive psychology that we talk about. It's called the hedonic treadmill. And I talk about it a lot with endurance athletes because it is so common, where basically what happens is, we often say, I'll be happier or I'll be satisfied when I make it to Worlds. I'll be happier, satisfied when I finish my first Ironman. It'll just be one, right? And we get that happiness increases and then it naturally goes back to baseline. We as humans, like we just have a natural set point for happiness in general. And so then we look for our next fix. And so then it's like, well, how about this one? Well, maybe I'll just do one more. And that's that hedonic, where it's the treadmill. It's like the hamster on the wheel. We're always looking for our next thing. So that fits really nicely with what Marilyn is saying, is like, don't make any huge decisions. Like give yourself a moment, because it's easy to get caught up in that cycle. And I've done it. It happens to a lot of us.
Mm-hmm. And like what you said there about like athletic identity and like leaning into other identities that you have, like what does that look like? Like, how do we lean into some of those other identities?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I often ask athletes, like, before this sport took this much time or this big chunk out of your life, like, how did you spend your time and your energy? And it might be like, working with, like, I have an athlete I'm thinking of right away, like AA meetings. She's like, I haven't been to one in a long time. Like, I want to go back. Or thinking of like volunteering, church communities, other just like, what are the other communities that you have been unintentionally pulled away from because you spent so much time training and competing? Like, go back. They still want you. Other friends, other family members. And then other fun things, like maybe it's gardening and taking like master gardener's class or buying more like indoor plants. That's what I like to do, right? So it's trying to kind of feed yourself in those other areas.
Right. Yeah. Like for me, that was definitely taking on like entrepreneurship and just retaking all of my goals from one area and just put them somewhere else. Right. Yeah. So when I have my next transition, who knows what's going to happen, but Jennifer, we have a comment from Mary Lou. Thank you for your comment. And if other people, just to decide, if other folks have questions, definitely throw them in the comments, whether you're watching on YouTube or on Facebook, because I will make sure we ask the panelists your questions. And she's saying that she's ready to get back after Ironman California, but her significant other really struggles with a time commitment to training. What would you say and I think this is, I mean, I've brought up that example before, like, I think this is super common. How do you coach those people?
Yeah. I mean, I think it starts with really being really clear on your goals and priorities and what that looks like. And then like working backwards into that. So, you know, you just did Ironman California, likely not going to do another race for like a while. So one suggestion is like, you know, definitely taking that time off, having a really good conversation with partner. Like, what is it they don't like about the training? Is it too much time? Because it's really fresh for them too. Like, they maybe need 2 weeks to like of a downtime. You know, they need like a break from training too, and then to reassess it. But if this is something that's really important to you, then get really clear. Is it just finishing Ironman? Is it being really competitive? Is it improving? Like, what is it about it that you want? Mm-hmm. And then what is it going to really take? And maybe that's working with a coach. Like, what are the pieces really going to take? And then having that conversation with your partner so that they feel a part of it as well. And they feel like on your team. Like, I find that that's the, if your partner can be on, feel like they're a part of your team and your experience, like that is something that goes for a long distance. And it's so much better to do that now in off season than like 4 weeks before a race when you're like head out the door for another like 8 hour ride. You know, like you want to do all of this work ahead of time so everybody feels like they're really on board at the same time, including yourself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great advice. And anyone else?
Yeah, I think like when it comes to any relationship, it's communication, right? How many athletes I work with that I actually have to say to them exactly the piece that Jennifer's talking about. Have you talked to everybody involved about what it is that this really entails? So if you're taking on an Ironman, does everybody know exactly what that means? Not just, hey, I entered an Ironman. And then a surprise, I'm going to be gone 20 hours a week and at work all week and exhausted when I'm around. So it's like having those conversations ahead of time. And it is oftentimes if you have a spouse that's not in the sport, or maybe you haven't expressed to them exactly how important this is to you, they're just sitting there waiting for this to be over. So I think that's really, they sit around going like, okay, this is over after this. And I think, you know, having a really good conversation with the people in your life that this isn't, you know, what did you guys say at the start? Triathlon didn't stop at Kona. It continues, yeah. Right? And if you are a triathlete, you are an endurance athlete, it's a really important conversation to have with the people in your life that, hey, yes, there's going to be times where that there's more dedication and it's going to be more time consuming. And this is when they are. And even, you know, map it out. And then these are going to be times where it's going to be a little bit more freedom and I'm going to be able to do a little bit more and I'm going to be able to be flexible and I'm going to have more time on my hands. And I think when everybody knows how important it is to you and that this isn't going anywhere, but this is how it can be structured throughout the year. So there's room for both things and then make them a part of it. And make them, you know, how can they be included in it and not just sitting there waiting for it to be done? Then I think that, you know, everyone can enjoy it, learn from it, and really be a part of the whole big picture of it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. And Marilyn, when's the best time to start thinking about, to start planning your goals again? Like, when's that nice time frame, or how does it vary for athlete to athlete?
Yeah, I'm mandatory. I have some athletes that the second they finish their race, they're ready to go within days to, you know, send me, you know, all of the breakdown of how it went and what they're going to do next. And I always say, like, give it a couple days and then we'll go over the race. And then once we've gone over the race and it's the end of the season, I always recommend, hey, take a week, 10 days, and just go in and do something else. Think about other things. You know, obviously I know that most of my athletes really well. And so I know if I need to be checking in on them more, or if they're the type of athlete that needs that schedule check, or if they need, you know, Jennifer and I had that very clear conversation. Hey, Marilyn, I need a week to do nothing. Okay. Just go away and do nothing. So, you know, I think that after that period of time, 1 or 2 weeks, then that's the time to start to revisit things. I think in that first 7 days, it just really should be encouraged to just relax and enjoy the downtime and take some time to reflect. Because how you feel at the finish line, how you feel 24 hours later, how you feel 48 hours later, and how you feel 1 week later is really, really different. So for example, I had an athlete that raced in Kona. We went in there with really, she had put in all the work. We went in with high expectations. She didn't quite have the day that she wanted. And I knew that she needed a little space, and how she felt immediately at the finish line, by the time we had even had our conversation about the race, was a full 10 days later. And it needed that amount of breathing room for her to really reflect on everything and see things differently and understand that even though some things that day didn't go the way they wanted, she went from being incredibly unhappy with herself to really realizing how good a job she had done all year, the improvement she made, and you know, how well the race actually went, just maybe not, we didn't quite hit the targets that we had set out to that day. So it changes, right? So to answer your question, I think a week, if you're going to put a number on it, give yourself a week, give yourself 7 days.
Yeah. Well, and you even talked about, you were like 10 days later. I'm like, 10 days is not that long. Not. Like, there's no limit on when you can start making your goals again, or when you can change your goals, or when, you know, like, there's not a lot of rules. It just tends to be around like when people start to get anxious and need that, you know. Erin, if folks are like looking for a way to start planning their next season, what do you recommend for starting that process of goal setting?
Yeah, I think the one thing I'll really stress is that the, I don't want to say the best athletes, the most successful or the most fulfilled, whatever we want to kind of define, the happiest or most satisfied athletes are going to be the ones who are willing to adjust and pivot their goals as needed. So they're consistently revisiting them. And so I think when it comes to like the goal setting process, it's asking yourself, I always go back to kind of your moral compass and your value system. Like, what am I getting out of this? And then who do I want to be as an athlete? How do I want other people to describe me? How do I want my coach to describe me? How do I want my partner, my family, or friends, or loved ones? What do I want them to say about me? And then what races fit with that? Like, values and goals have to align, because if they are butting heads, like, you are not going to be a happy athlete, because you're going to feel like you're always letting someone down or letting yourself down, or you're not going to be fully satisfied because this goal that you're working toward isn't really truly allowing you to be the athlete you want to be. You might feel stifled, frustrated, something doesn't fit right. So I say, do the work by first setting your values. What do I want to go for this year? What do I want to lean into? And then the goals can follow. And then you ask yourself, okay, if I really lean into, you know, persistence or consistency with training or mental toughness, what is that going to look like for me on the race course, on the trainer, in the pool, at 5 a.m. And then am I able and willing to do that?
I love that. That's because at first I was like, what does she mean, values relating to goal? Yeah. Like, you know, it's like, I value kindness. So how do I turn that into a triathlon goal?
So like one really good example is like, let's say you have, let's say family is one of your values. Ironman is very, very, we know it takes a lot out of you. And so what can you still, if you really want to go for Ironman, great. How are you going to still prioritize this value of family? What is that going to look like? And it might be bringing kids with you for some of the run or the ride, even though it's not matching your numbers or your splits that you're supposed to hit. It might mean like compromising and going, having a date night once a week with your spouse. But you've got to kind of build that into your goal setting. Otherwise, you're just going to feel like you're letting your family down for those 8 or 9 months. And then you're going to feel frustrated with yourself. And then it's like that kind of, that they might feel resentful, and then no one's happy. So I always say, who do you want to be as an athlete? And then build the goals around that.
Right. Right. And Jennifer, is that how you set your goals? Like, do you think about your values? And I know that you said you have a daughter. Mm-hmm. Yeah. How do you align those things in your life?
Yeah. I also like to think about like, how do I want to feel throughout the year? So a lot of, you know, if you think of how we take action, it's from our feelings, and then that creates our results. So it's supposed to just be in focus on like a goal or a time or this, like, how do I want to feel at the end of the season? How do I want to feel with each race? And then where is that going to get me? And I actually do that like year after year, because as we know with endurance sports, you kind of build season after season. So I like to build to that piece of it as well. So I add that feeling piece in, like, how do I want to feel after this race, building to it? What do I want that experience to be like? How do I want to show up for race day, all the way across the board? And then I'm really big on periodizing like my priorities. So like, my daughter's super important to me, but honestly, like 4 weeks before Ironman, like, I'm not going to be the best. I'm going to be really tired. I'm going to fall asleep in her bed when I put her to bed, like every night. We're going to have like not the best food. Like, there are things I'm going to do, but now that my race is over, we did the trunk retreat and like the pumpkin farm, and I have been everything. I volunteer like 4 times in our classroom. Like, I am super present, because I know when before a race, I just can't be, because I'm going to prioritize my race experience over volunteering in the classroom. So I work that into my planning and my races too. So if you take a family trip, it's going to be at a time that makes sense for everybody. So I'm not like trying to train and be on a family trip or be frustrated because I can't train. So that, I think, is a big piece of it, is how you like prioritize, like periodize the goal setting as well. So that all kind of fits into a year. And then again, back to like making sure everybody's aware of that. Like, I have a full conversation with my daughter about like, this is what this is going to look like. Like, this is what this month will probably be like, and here's why. And she's like, okay, like, I'm on board for it. And that works really well.
Yeah. And also I think I like to remind myself that like it's important for, in particular, our daughters to see us doing those things.
It's so important
to see like that as women, we have goals, that we have things that we do inside the house, that we can be girl bosses and Ironman triathletes and all of things. Yeah.
My mom was a stay-at-home mom and I never like really understood that. And so I've had to do a lot of like self-work and being like, mm-hmm. it's okay if I leave the house and she stays with her other parent, totally fine to have time with her dad. I can go ride a bike. I'm not a bad mom, but that comes up a lot. And so it's a lot mm-hmm. of like self-work and understanding that. So when you set your goals and those thoughts come up, like if I race four times, I'm a bad mom, or what does that mean for a family? Mm-hmm. Like really evaluate, where is that coming from? Is that a thought you really want to keep? Like, is that really a belief you want to have? Or can you reformat how you think about your racing as an athlete, as a mom, and other benefits you're providing to your kids? Like, you know, my daughter got to see me at the all women's race, the world championship. And that honestly has changed the view of herself, maybe for her life. I mean, it was really that powerful. And she got to do that because I prioritize at some points in my life racing so that I can get to that race and she can be a part of it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. So Mary Lou's asking, do you ever suggest like moving your long rides and runs? This is maybe for Marilyn during the week to free up weekends for family. Is that something in practical terms that you recommend for athletes?
Oh yeah. I mean, a training schedule has got to work with someone's life, right? So everybody's life, it looks a little bit different. And if, you know, if it works better for them to do their long ride on Wednesday than it does on Saturday, then that's our job as a coach to program that accordingly. You know, there's going to be some people travel a lot for work, or they have other, you know, other things in their life that just there's all kinds of moving parts, and you've got to be able to program around it that you get them ready for their event. And so yes, absolutely. I mean, there's all different kinds of way to prepare someone to do well in a race, and then, you know, help them successfully come off of a race season or a major event and feel really good about themselves and, you know, reevaluate, set new goals, all those kinds of things. And, you know, whatever, when you work with someone as a coach, you're not just giving them a plan and say, do this. You say, what does your life look like? What are your goals? And then now we need to build a progressive and consistent and repeatable program that allows you to achieve those goals and keep getting better and better. And if that's not working around their life, then that's not going to happen. Right. So that's a really important and basic front end conversation between coach and athlete. So absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's really and cool. I think that's where coaches are so helpful. Like Jen and Marilyn, with like setting goals, they need to be realistic. And so talk to your coach about, be like, okay, this is what I'm dreaming about. And then coach can check you and being like, okay, let's look at your training volume this past year, this past season. How was it for you? Was it manageable? I noticed A, B, and C. If you want to pursue this, this is likely what we'd be looking at. Is that something that you have room for? And then that's where you have to do some soul searching. Like, what am I willing to kind of compromise on? What am I willing to move and shift in my life for this season in order to meet these goals or to go toward them? Or do I want to like focus on something else, another part of my identity, and then shift the goal to make it more reasonable or manageable given those expectations or other responsibilities that I've set for myself, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, before we go, if anyone has a question, please ask it now. But I do want to ask this because I think I'll ask you to start, Erin, but others can jump in. Like, I know that for some folks, that post-race moment can lead to a more serious depression. So if we do have people listening who are struggling to, like, they've heard the advice, but they're struggling to pull themselves out, what do you suggest for those people?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think the first thing is like assuming that they're doubling down on all of the basics: sleep, nutrition, rest, vitamin D, like movement, whatever that looks like, social support, like make sure that you've got those bases covered. And then if the symptoms really do continue, especially more than like 2 weeks, that's when we're looking at something more serious, and look at how it's affecting like your functioning in other areas of life. Is it affecting your relationships, your work, other components of like your relationship with your coach? Are you going silent, going rogue, and no longer commenting on things, right? That's when there's probably something else going on. I always say, try to find a like mental performance sport person who is also a licensed clinician, because they can help you unpack it very much overlaps. I'm happy to provide resources. The one that I would say that's easy to Google is the U.S. Olympic and Paralympic Committee has a mental health registry, and it's basically a huge database. You can see all the states, whether or not providers take insurance, contact information, everything. So just search USOPC mental health registry, and you can trust that everyone on that list has been vetted and is licensed as a mental health professional and sport. And so they're either a sports psychologist or comparable given their license. And so that's always kind of the best step. Also, talk to your coach if you're able to have that relationship with them and that conversation with them, because they can also provide you with some resources and kind of put you in contact with folks.
Yep.
The one thing I would love to add to that is, for you said, Sarah, there's going to be people who are listening who are struggling with this, and we're giving them great advice, information, and tools. But I think the first step is, if you are one of these people, is to speak up and say something, because most people, you know, we're by design, we're hard on ourselves and as endurance athletes, and it's hard to admit when you're struggling, because we always want to be seen as successful. And so the most important thing is to, if you are struggling, a lot of people will even set in place all of the tools that we suggest and they'll still be struggling, but they won't say anything. So just have the courage to say something to somebody, to anybody, whether it's a close friend or a coach or a spouse or someone, but just be okay with actually speaking up and saying something about it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's great advice. Jennifer, any last minute words of wisdom?
I would say the only other thing is, this is such a great time to work on the mindset pieces that perhaps you haven't incorporated into your training. Like, that is the piece of, you can do all you want with like physical training, but if you haven't really like honed in your mindset when you race and train, like that's a piece, an element that you're missing. And now is a great time to start. Even if it's like a 10-minute meditation every morning, like give it a try, download an app, give it a shot, like use that now and create that habit. So when training picks up, you're already used to doing that. And now you can start to incorporate that into your training and your endurance training into your racing. And so now is a great time, or even like mobility work, like anything that is super enhanceable, that's really hard to do, like when you're thick of racing and training, do it now. And then it'll already be a part of your routine in life by the time you pick up training again for the next race.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Yeah, that's something I've found super useful the last couple of years, is like that 10 minutes of motivation or meditation, I should say, in the morning, where it's like, yeah. And I'm literally like in the habit of asking myself, like, what am I doing today? How do I want the day to go? And does it align with like my values and goals? Right. Mm-hmm. And then you can sense those things right away. Like when something's off, like, oh, maybe that's not a road I should be going down, you know?
Yeah.
That's something I found super helpful.
Yeah. And, you know, do that for 2 weeks and then maybe set your goals and priorities after that. You might be in a slightly different place if you spend that quiet time with yourself than you would be 10 days after a race. Like maybe you do it a month afterwards, after two weeks of doing some mindfulness work. Right. Might be totally different.
Mm-hmm. Anyone else? Last minute words of wisdom before we sign off. Any other questions? You've imparted all your wisdom. Amazing. Well, thank you all so much. Thanks, Erin, Marilyn, Jennifer. We appreciate you. And for our audience and people listening after, yes, all the best with all of your next moves. And we hope that you have at least gleaned some wisdom from our panel today. So thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Thank you,
everyone.